The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A rested child is a happy child. Sleep Tight Stories is a weekly podcast that brings comfort and joy to families worldwide with calming bedtime stories. The stories are relevant to children and spark wonder without overstimulation, so they can fall asleep and stay asleep. Listen to Sleep Tight Stories on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. For a bedtime routine you'll miss when they're grown, Sleep Tight Stories.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Volume.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storr on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver. And this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courtney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor.
It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. I'm Abby, a mother of 2, and I had these battles myself. Endless excuses, delay tactics, and many tears and tantrums. But I've created a solution. The perfect kids podcast that makes bedtime a dream. It's called Koala Moon, and it's hosted by me, Abby. With over 300 episodes, packed with original stories and sleep meditations, Koala Moon makes bedtimes easy and enjoyable. Episodes start out engaging and really rather magical, but as they progress, they gently slow to a calm and relaxing pace to have your little ones out like a light. Since launching in 2022, Koala Moon has helped with over 20 million nights sleep and received over 6,000 five-star reviews. Win back your evenings. Listen to Koala Moon now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The college football season is in full swing, and you can make every moment more with FanDuel Sportsbook, because right now, all customers get a $10 parlay bet bonus. Just place a $20 parlay bet and get a $10 bonus win or lose. Here's what I've got. I've got a four-legger for you guys. I'm taking Memphis money line at UCF. Give me Oklahoma State plus 6.5 at Iowa State. I love Oregon money line against UCLA, and give me San Diego State money line against Air Force. There's some dogs in there for you. All right, and there's a lot of reasons to love FanDuel. The live betting's unbelievable. We know how popular that is, but my thing is so easy to use. That's one of the reasons for me. It's easy to navigate. I don't have to sit there and look around to find what I want. And there's so many more reasons, but those are just two of them. And if you're new to FanDuel Sportsbook, sign up today with promo code JBOY. That's J-B-O-Y to also receive a risk-free bet up to $1,000. That's promo code JBOY, J-B-O-Y, to receive a risk-free bet up to $1,000, but make sure you use that promo code so they know that I sent you. 21 and over, present in Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, or West Virginia. Bonus issued is non-withdrawal site credit that expires in 7 days. Max bonus $10 plus $400 final price. No longer required. Are longer required. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text Next Step to 53342 in Arizona. 1-800-GAMBLER or visit fanduel.com/RG in Colorado, Indiana, New Jersey, and Virginia. 1-800-270-7117. For confidential help in Michigan, the Tennessee Red Line's 1-800-889-9789, or you can visit www.1800gambler.net in West Virginia.
Live from the College Football Hall of Fame, welcome to the J-Boy Show on The Volume. Presented by FanDuel and hosted by Jake Crane.
This is Roman Harper.
This is Derek Stingley Jr.
This is David Pollack, and you're watching the J-Boy Show.
And you're watching the J-Boy Show.
And thanks for watching the J-Boy Show.
Hey, what's up, everybody? We're right past the middle of Jocktober. Appreciate you guys hanging in here with us. Got a great Monday show for you. So much going on, from Ed Orgeron and LSU coming to an agreement about his exit to the weekend review. We had some great games on what we crowned Sneaky Saturday, and boy, it was a little bit sneaky, especially if you're the Iowa Hawkeyes. Going to start out, I do want to talk a little bit about Edo. Going to give a weekend review. Then is Matt Corral going to play this weekend? Lane Kiffin throwing maybe a little bit of rat poison of his own out there. I'm going to give you my take on that. Bo Nix coming off one of the best performances of his career. They've really put it together offensively. Georgia week was a little tough. It always is against Georgia. The receivers bounce back. He has some great insight on what Brian Harsin's telling the team right now as they continue to control their own destiny. We're going to hit our 5 stars of the weekend. You can probably guess what our 1 star is going to be. Going to talk about the Tennessee situation, even though I don't think that was a good representation of what the Tennessee fan base is, but they missed out on a huge opportunity. And I'm going to tell you what that is. We're going to bring Mike Scarborough Scarborough on from TigerBait.com to talk about the early names for the LSU coaching job. And there are some big ones out there. LSU, one of the most sought after jobs in the country. We're going to give you our SEC power rankings and our sharp bets as well. Another weekend in the green. Started out pretty good, got rough there in the middle, but we finished with a bang. Blaine ended up finishing pretty hot. Thank you, Army in Wisconsin, for that first half under.
Easy money.
Easy money. We're going to get to that as well. And of course, the Booster Club, what is being referred to as the greatest grassroots movement of all time. So make sure you throw your questions in there. We're going to read them live. Analysis going to go right up to about 4:15 Eastern today. But where I want to start is with this Ed Orgeron situation. I want to bring the team in here in a second. I think it's smart for Scott Woodward and them to go ahead and rip the Band-Aid off. But you really didn't rip it off. You kind of pulled it up a little bit, saw that maybe there's still a chance of infection, and kind of put it back down. Mm-hmm. But I do like them announcing that they're going to move on from Ed Orgeron. You get that out of the way. But if I'm Ed O, and really if I'm LSU, I don't want to just hang out. And I know there's stuff going on behind the scenes, and you could say, well, did they use some of the periphery damage control against him? You get a reduced buyout. But if I'm LSU, why not just name an interim? Blaine has a great analogy for this. I'm going to let him get to in a second. But if I'm an LSU player, if I'm an LSU recruit, if I'm an LSU assistant coach, we're just going to hang out together. I'm fired. You're fired pretty much, but we're still here. Why not just name the interim? Let the guys really start reaching out. They're going to reach out anyway. Ed Orgeron's already said he doesn't want to coach next year. Now, we'll see how that goes a couple months when he's out of it. But I'm just not in love with hanging around. And if I'm Ed Orgeron and everything's even, just fire me. Just fire me. Or if we want to negotiate and you want to fire me and I'll take somewhat of a reduced buyout, that's fine. But I don't want to just hang around. You know, this isn't a Counting Crows song. I don't want to just hang around this place on the corner. That's not the situation I want. You know LSU is going to be reaching out. There's some candidates. Mike Scarborough is going to join us. As I mentioned, there's some big-time candidates that, to me, can bring LSU back to what they should be and what we're kind of used to seeing as the previous coaches have all won national championships. They've pretty much been relevant. We know how well they recruit. And I want to get to the Booster Club in a second, but I'm not huge on Ed Orgeron just sticking around. And the analogy that Blaine's going to use is, it's kind of like when you get divorced and you're living in the same house.
Yeah.
You know, what are we going to do with the dogs? You know, how are we going to split the kids up? I got to come down in the kitchen every morning and I just see you there. And it brings back the memories of when we were happy in 2019 and you loved me and I would come home and we just stare in each other's eyes while the notebook was on, drinking wine or however you got down. It's just not, it's a weird situation. If I'm an LSU fan, let's just get it out. Let's move on. Edo's had his fun. You know, thanks for the memories, Fallout Boy style. I'm bringing all the bands out right now, all seven of them that I know. But I just don't love the situation. And looking to kind of at the weekend and how it evolved, if you go back, I'm telling you, one of my favorite things to do on this show, and the audience really enjoys it, I see you on social media, is our keys to victory on Friday. Because you can go back and look at them, and we've been pretty spot on with them. Now, nobody's perfect, and I don't have all the answers. I've got a decent amount of them, but not all of them. But when you look back at some of the bigger games, Georgia and Kentucky, Georgia is winning games the way that Georgia wants to win games. They're like gravity. It's like I say, you don't realize it's there. I don't realize gravity is here right now. But in 45 years, when I'm hunched over and my back hurts and I've lost, you know, 3 inches of height, hopefully just height, I'm going to look back and say, well, gravity was there. And that's what Georgia does. They just push you and push you and push you until in the second half, you look up and you're like, we're down 24 to Georgia. It's nothing flashy. It's nothing super sexy offensively. But when you're able to win like that and win the way you want to and control and dictate the pace of the game, you will put yourself in a great position to win not only early, but late as well. And that's where Georgia puts you away, is late. Now, I do want to say, Kentucky, we mentioned it. They had to get Exotic on first down. Well, going into the third quarter, they were averaging 2.8 yards per play on first down. I thought Liam Cohen was great in the red zone. I wish he would have taken that red zone approach on first down if you're a Kentucky fan and kind of seen if you could have scored a couple more or put yourself in contention. But I thought Kentucky matched their physicality about as much as anybody's matched Georgia's physicality this year. And I think it shows you where Kentucky is as a program. We talk about Mark Stoops building it inside out, and you can tell that it wasn't old-fashioned thrashing Kentucky. They weren't giving up inside zone for 60 yards. They didn't just get ran all over, but you saw Georgia, the more they press on you, the more they press on you, the more you start to permeate a little bit, and that's when those 15 yards run hit. That's when the play action hits and he hits Ladd McConkey on the post. That's where the reverse gets you because you're flowing so hard to one side of the ball trying to stop the simple base stuff that Georgia does, and they continue to roll. You look at Auburn and Arkansas. What was the key to victory for Auburn? You got to rush to win, and that didn't just mean running the ball on the ground. Now, was Auburn electric on the ground? No, but you saw when they went to a four down. And make no mistake, Auburn is a four-down defense. They've played a bunch of odd, a bunch of three-down. But, man, they looked more comfortable and more effective. They looked better bringing pressure out of the four-down and even rushing with four. You saw Kobe Wooden get in there. You saw Derek Hall be able to get in there a couple times. I even think the Harris kid did a really good job of stunting in the middle and giving them a little bit of an interior pass rush. And you saw that culminate in a turnover for a touchdown. This Auburn defense hasn't gotten a lot of turnovers. And you force KJ Jefferson to fumble in the end zone and take away all the momentum. And if Auburn is able to do that and they were able to be at least competent in the running game and just make it effective, you saw Bo Nix on those modified runs and those quick passes be able to find holes in the zone because Arkansas had to take the run game seriously, whether it was getting in the eye and running the toss. They're setting up the slam and slide off that, buddy. Get ready for that. Talked about it during the game a little bit. But it was just a complete victory by Auburn, and you see that Auburn is improving each week. Now, on the other side, for Arkansas, at some point, their zones are going to have to tighten up because what teams are saying, and you're watching teams do this to Patrick Mahomes right now in the NFL, and it's not a bad theory, and it's going to work most of the time, but when it doesn't, you don't look incompetent, but you don't look like you have any answers when your zone is that wide, and you're saying, okay, that's fine. You can run it. We'll let you run it. We'll flow. We'll stun every now and then. We'll slant. We'll change the gaps with the three down, but you can take the short passes and the holes in the zone. Auburn took that the whole time. If you look at where Arkansas struggled against Ole Miss too, it wasn't just the vertical ball. They were hitting the holes in the zone. That's where Barry Odom is going to have to make adjustments on defense. I know Catalan was out. They were beat up, but a lot of people are beat up this time of year. It's not an excuse. It's next man up. Just look at A&M right now. And when you look at this Arkansas defense, they're going to have to start playing some more man. You're going to have to start taking a little more chances because teams are getting smart enough and the quarterbacks are making the adjustment enough to say, okay, you want to give me the five-yard hitch and we'll be in second and three, I'll take it. It's third and five and you want to give up the seam to the tight end every time, we'll take it. And it's going to force them to start having to come down. Will you give up more explosive plays? Yes, but you will be much more effective on third and five, third and six, third and seven, and you're going to see offenses continue to sprinkle in the short passing game, the intermediate passing game, draw them up, and that's when you take the shot off play action. We saw Auburn do that exact thing with Demetrius Robertson for a touchdown this past game. Florida and LSU. And we've talked about this a lot, and I do want to give a shout-out to Blake Ruffino from Are You Serious Sports Network. They cover LSU. Me and him talk about this all the time. If you go back and watch the tape, LSU is a gap scheme run team. They're much better at that than zone. And some offensive lines are built like that. Some offensive lines are much better zone runners. You look at Auburn. Auburn is a much better zone run team than they are a gap scheme team because gap scheme can only hit in certain areas. They're very narrow areas, but a lot of it is big on big. You have your back blocks. You have your pullers, your kick, and your wrap, whether it's a two-puller or a one-puller kick or a one-puller power where they're going up for the backer. But my biggest question and my thing if I'm a Florida fan and just a football fan in general, because there's small things and small adjustments that a ton of coaches know. And I don't want to get down too far in the weeds and really get deep into the terminology, but our audience is smart. And we talk about winning the water cooler. There's two ways to handle gap scheme are pullers. Pullers that are going to kick, multiple pullers. You can box it, which is where you set the edge hard, you have them keep everything underneath, and you try and condense it and reduce it, and the linebackers have to come and make the plays, or you don't want to backdoor the power or anything like that on defense. That's when you get screwed over, honestly. And then you have the ability to spill it or wrong arm it. And when you guys see that, that's when you see the pullers come across, you get, whether it's the end, who's ever crashing off that edge, takes what I call their outside shoulder and turns it on the inside shoulder of the puller, and you almost cut the puller, but you don't technically cut him. You're trying to create a pileup. You're trying to keep those pullers from gaining ground and getting to either that first level wide, or second level tight, and by doing that, you make the back go lateral, because if you're going lateral, you're not going north. It's the same thing when you're defending a punt. You want that first guy to go throw and make that returner go lateral, because all the punt returns we see that hit, typically where they catch it and they're north out the gate, they make one cut, they beat one layer. It's a lot similar to that in the run game. Florida never made that adjustment. Todd Grantham knows how to spill things. This is not some Da Vinci Code style football that only Bill Belichick and you know, Footballias, the god of football, the Greek god of football, know. Everybody knows this. 13-year-olds know this. So it shocked me when Florida kept boxing everything. Because in practice, when you're working it, when the offense is working it, 90% of the time, they are working on it when it gets boxed. All right, they're going to set the edge, you're going to pull up and clean this. Or they're going to set the edge, and you're going to hit it here. They don't work a ton against spill. Now, it may happen against their own defense, because that's what their defense is getting taught. But Florida just kept doing the same thing. LSU's offensive linemen were shocked pulling around that there was no adjustment, because it wasn't like they were getting 3, 4, or 5 yards. They were ripping off 15 to 25-yard runs just off the GT, just off the backside guard and tackle, just pulling. All right, there's the kick, there's the seal, it's me and the safety, or the safety fit wrong, and there it is. And that made Max Johnson look like Troy Aikman, because everybody in Florida, those safeties started to walk up because the safeties were having to make tackles at 5, 6, 7 yards against gap scheme, and that's when Max Johnson was like, psych, and they were hitting the big plays and the crossers. Florida didn't have a problem scoring. He scored 42 points. LSU got a pick six, all that and the other, that's fine. But Florida did not make simple adjustments. This isn't changing alignment. This isn't changing your whole defense and just throwing something at the wall. This is ABCs. And Todd Grantham and them never made the adjustment. I was legitimately shocked watching that game. And we'll hit the other ones. Bama rolled Mississippi State like we thought they were going to.
Expected that.
Yeah, Will Rogers threw it to Bama a couple times early, and then it just snowballed. And it was a great matchup for Bama, because Mississippi State's not going to line it up and run it at you the way Florida lined up and ran it at you, the way A&M lined up and ran it at you. So it was a much better lineup or matchup for the inside backers at Alabama. We're not going to know more about Alabama's defense until they go up against somebody that physically and athletically can move them if they play well, and they're getting it ran right at them. That's when we're going to find out. That's why that Georgia matchup, if I'm Georgia, I'm like Birdman in the mirror right now when I'm looking at that. If I'm Jamari Sawyer in the I want that, because that takes a lot of pressure off who? Stetson Bennett. Now, will JT Daniels be back? He took some of the third team reps, Coach Smart said before the game, but we're going to see. That's an interesting injury. And we're going to get Bo Nix in here in a second, and then when he gets out, we're going to go to Pasquale's, hit the booster club. I got to talk about this Matt Corral and Lane Kiffin situation. Lane Kiffin came out today and said, look, guys, you know, Matt Corral's probably not going to play. He had 30 carries. Let me go ahead and give you a hint. The guy's playing. He's in the Heisman race. This is Lane. This is some gamesmanship. Is he beat up? Yes. I was scared for a second that he hyperextended his knee or worse on that play late against Tennessee. And believe me, Tennessee, I'm going to get to you guys here during the middle of the show, because all the other stuff, you'll hear the generic, oh, it's a bad look, this, that, and the other, and it is. But there's an important part of the puzzle that Tennessee fans, and especially the ones that made the mistakes of throwing stuff on the field, are not understanding what they just did. And I'm going to get to that. But Matt Corral, I would be more shocked if Matt Corral didn't play than Florida not adjusting to the gap scheme run game. The dude's going to play. Now, will he be as effective running around? No, I don't think so.
He'll just rush for 100 yards.
Yeah, he'll just rush for 100 yards this time. But Matt Corral, the leading Heisman contender right now in my mind, and in a lot of people's minds across the country, I don't think there's a shot in hell that he doesn't play. Ole Miss needs him. He is the straw that stirs the drink. He's the best offensive player in college football. Notice I didn't say player in college football. I think Jordan Davis has an argument there playing his position. I think he is as dominant or more at his position than Matt Corral is at his. It's not a knock on either guy. That's just the truth and how it is in my mind. But Ole Miss, I would, and they're beat up. They're without their left guard. Braylon Sanders went down. We know about the injuries that are piling up for Ole Miss. And this LSU game this week is so interesting. The over-under's at 76.5, which tells me that they think Matt Corral is going to play. And this LSU defense, we know they're down a lot of guys. This could be a very high-scoring game. Chance Campbell looked like he had a wrist. The Mike, the transfer to Ole Miss, who's just been playing out of his mind. That defense is getting more beat up. You saw Wright go down for a little bit. I did think he came back in the game. Knight, the safety, is an undersized player, but a really good player for Ole Miss in the back end. And LSU's got some confidence. You know now what's happening with your coach, so that distraction is kind of out of the way, and that's a really, really exciting game. But speaking about exciting games, Bo Nix played about as well as he could. I think the Auburn offense played about as well as they could, but don't believe me. Let's get Bo Nix in here and let him tell you. All right, as usual on Monday, we are joined by Auburn quarterback Bo Nix, coming off a great performance against Arkansas, one of the most efficient that I've seen him play. Bo, congratulations, man. I appreciate you coming on again.
Thank you. I appreciate it a lot.
Definitely. Well, hey, look, we got to jump in the Arkansas game. I know you guys are moving forward, 24-hour rule, this, that, and the other. But something that I saw, and I've watched this kind of throughout the year, is as you continue to look more comfortable in the system, you and the wide receivers really seemed on time. Is there something you guys went back to this week a little bit, maybe in the drop, slowing down a little bit? Because I haven't seen you guys in that chemistry yet this year, and it was on full display against Arkansas Saturday. It was beautiful to watch.
Yeah, I don't think it was necessarily anything different that we did. But we just, I guess, a little bit more focused on the things that we could control. And this week we knew we had to do better in the passing game and obviously be a little bit more precise, just throwing and catching the ball, and that's what we did. We started out early with a good drive. I believe we were like 6-6 or something, 5-5, whatever it was, and then capped it off with a touchdown. And obviously that was a big explosive play that kind of started us off pretty good, and then that kind of gave us the confidence throughout the game that we've already done it, so we can do it again. And so that's always good when you can hit an explosive early in the game and get your offense going and get points on the board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you guys seem pretty balanced. You know, that first drive you talk about coming out, being able to show the defense different things, and it looked like you were taking what they were giving you and not trying to force it, whether they were the numbers were inside and you were spitting it out outside to Kobe Hudson or something like that. Just talk about how you got to take what they give you, and that sets you up for the shot later, and we saw that as the game went on.
Yeah, exactly. They obviously did a little bit more zone coverage, and when you get zone coverage, you obviously get a few more holes in the defense, and the windows mm-hmm. aren't necessarily as tight depending on the scheme you run. And I thought our game plan was really good for what they did on defense, and we attacked those areas that they were vulnerable, and we just did a good job of making the easy plays. We made the routine plays over and over, and we made them consistently, and obviously that helped us in the passing game, just being efficient.
Yeah, and you talk about zone coverage, Bo, and something I think that goes unspoken when you're watching and if you're not at practice is, you know, you have routes and combinations and stuff like that, but guys settling in the zone, and that takes chemistry. It seemed like you guys did a good job of kind of fitting in, like you mentioned, against that zone coverage. How important is that to have that chemistry with the receivers to say, hey, I may cut this route off here if they're playing me over the top because I'm going to be wide open?
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, all it is really chemistry and timing. And knowing the details of the route, knowing the details of the progression. So sometimes it's mandatory that guys continue to go through a coverage, go through a zone to open up somebody else. And then other times the route is known that they can kind of adjust and get open based off the scheme. And so we do a good job, just as from Coach Bobo and Coach Harson, they do a good job of putting us in situations where we do have those kind of opportunities. And then guys this week just did a good job of knowing what kind of role they played in the scheme, whether that was getting open or whether that was just maybe this time I'm just kind of the eye candy for the defense, and just I have to go occupy somebody to open up somebody else. And I think the more and more we get comfortable with our scheme, with our own offense, that'll help just throughout in the future, just to open up other guys. And so everybody has a role in each play. Everybody has a job to do. And we just did our jobs well on Saturday, and we did things to get other guys open. And then, like you said, guys just adjusted on the fly. And if their route called for them to settle in a space that was open, that's what they did. But like I said, we'll go back to our schemes. Our schemes just did a good job of going to their void areas and getting open.
For sure. And for two straight weeks, I thought Coach Bobo called the best game I've seen him call while he's been at Auburn. The script has been fire to start the past two games, whether it was Georgia, whether it was this one. And then, you know, as well, you got to get off the script eventually. Some people ask me, it's funny, but they're like, why don't they just script every play? It doesn't work like that because defenses adjust and you got to be able to adjust with it. But I want to take you back to really the play that kind of iced it. The quarterback draw for a touchdown. How surprised were you when you went empty? Because we all know they have a couple empty checks, zone, man, pressure, whatever. How shocked were you when they went basically wide and you had that five-man box and there was a hat on a hat? I know maybe were the lights going off a little bit in the back of your head? Like, I think I'm going to have a chance to score this one.
Yeah, we actually called that play earlier. I believe it was the drive before and got mixed up in who we the blocking scheme as opposed to the route and got a few kind of messed up ourselves on that one, or it could have been what we saw later in the
game. That's exactly right.
Touchdown there. So we knew what we were getting when we went empty, and we knew what kind of coverages they were playing to us. And they kind of were, they didn't have a whole lot of adjustments to empty, and we knew what we were going to get. And so when we went empty that last time, a second and long, we knew we were going to get man free or some kind of zone coverage. And when they went man free, it was just a 4-1 box, so we had it up everybody, and it was just me on the safety. And that's all you can ask for from an offensive play caller, is to get your better players on free safeties that are 15, 20 yards away from the ball. And that's exactly what we did. We missed it the first time and then executed it the next.
Yeah, right when I saw that nickel run outside, I was like, well, they got the numbers, and I guarantee you they're probably not throwing the ball. But, Bo, a couple more, and we'll let you get out of here. What was Coach Harsin's message to you guys after the game? I mean, him coming in, you know, you've played in the SEC. He's never coached in it before. He comes in, you go get a win on the road at LSU. You play a tough Georgia team at home and lose, and then go get a big win against a talented Arkansas team on the road. What was his message to you guys?
Yeah, we just got to continue to stay focused. Moving forward, obviously after Georgia, we were frustrated, but we responded very well. We had a good week of practice. We came back on Sunday, reevaluated where we were and where we needed to go. And obviously our focus was high, and that helped us Saturday because we had a good week of practice. And so just moving forward, we can't have a different type of focus after a win than we do with a loss. We have to be consistent in the focus that we bring to practice, the focus that we bring to meetings, and that will carry us on throughout the year and continue to put us in good situations to win games.
For sure. And Bo, you know, looking at the rest of the schedule, you guys control your own destiny. I mean, not only that, you get Alabama at home. Obviously, in the SEC, you're going to play good teams every week, and you've got to get there. But what does it mean to you and the leaders of this team that at this point, where we're sitting halfway through, a little bit over halfway through October, you guys control your own destiny, which that's all you can ask for, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We know that. We're aware of that situation, and we know that we just got to continue to stack wins. And each week is championship week for us. You know, each week is a new week, a new opportunity to go out and be 1-0, as we always like to say. And if we continue to stack on wins, if we continue to pile those up, then we will be in control of our situation, and we have all the chances in the world to have a great season. And obviously the learning experiences that we've had in the earlier two losses, we can grow and we can learn from. And that's all you can ask for. When you do lose the games, you just don't want the losses to turn into two or three losses. You just want to learn from those and not make the same mistakes again. So we're excited moving forward. We know we have great opportunity, but at the same time, we know we're going to have to bring extreme focus and demand certain things out of ourselves that we have to continue to give in order for us to win, because each opponent is going to be good. Obviously, in the SEC West, we just finish on out with, I believe it's 5 or 6 more SEC games, and that's tough. And so good thing we have an off week this week so we can reevaluate where we are, continue to build on the things that we're good at, and obviously critique and fix the things that we're not. And then moving forward, we just have to continue to play clean, continue to get better and better. And we have 2 weeks here before we play another game to make sure that we're a better team than what we put on display for Arkansas. And so moving forward, the rest of the season, we got to continue to take it 1 week at a time and just go out there and play the best we can.
Definitely. And my last question for you, Bo, you've played a lot of snaps. You've been in a lot of big games. You've been in different situations. How different are you, or how have you grown from even the beginning of this year to where you are now as an individual, as a player? Because it seems to me like you've hit a rhythm. You guys have found your identity a little bit as an offense. And when the guys outside are making the plays and you're delivering the ball on time, y'all can be dangerous on offense. But how have you grown since the start of the season?
Yeah, I think I've grown within the scheme and within the game plan. Mm-hmm. Obviously, knowing different coaching staff, they obviously kind of want and expect different things. And so once I figured out what they want and expect out of me, it's been easier to play good football. And so obviously continuing to learn the progressions and learn the offense always helps. And then this is my third year in the SEC, so I've seen about every coverage I can see and just continue to dissect and get my eyes on the right things in a game. And I feel like the past three games I've seen things and kind of controlled the controllables as best as I have really in my career. I've been the most prepared. I've expected what I was going to get. So I can go out there and just play ball, and I can go out there and be in rhythm and know where the ball is supposed to be on time. And then just at the end of the day, after about the third or fourth game this year, I just kind of decided to myself that I'm just going to compete and do whatever I have to do to win the game. And once I've started doing that, I played really good the past 3 weeks. Really since LSU when I mm-hmm. kind of flipped that switch and just, said, forget trying to make the perfect play, forget trying to be the perfect quarterback and showing different things and just be myself. At the end of the day, that's all I can bring to the table, and that's good enough. And so I just want to continue to do that, continue to compete as hard as I can, play as hard as I can for the guys beside me. And I know they're going to do that in return. And so as an offense, if we continue just to compete and play with great effort and play for the guy beside us and play, do our job and do what we're yeah. supposed to do within the scheme, then, like you said, we can be dangerous, and we do have a good opportunity in front of us.
Definitely. Well, you've seen more coverages than an insurance salesman, man. That's for sure, when you take as many snaps as you have. But, Bo, I always right. appreciate it, buddy. Yeah, definitely. I get a few good ones every now and then, but I'll be here all week, literally. I appreciate you coming on, as always, man. Enjoy the bye week, a little time to rest. I know you're going to be in that film room like Steven Spielberg, though.
That's right. Yeah, I got to just keep the keep your foot down and continue to move forward, because there's a lot of growth I can make this week, and so that's – always important. But a bye week in this time of the season is really good, and we're ready for it, and we're going to take it as best as we can and make the most out of it.
Yeah, smells like a self-scout. But all right, Bo, I appreciate it, buddy, as usual. Be safe out there. We'll talk again next week.
Yes, sir, I appreciate it. Thank you, War Eagle.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we got to give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are going to be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court, and what's next. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. I'm Abby, a mother of two, and I had these battles myself. Endless excuses, delay tactics, and many tears and tantrums. But I've created a solution. The perfect kids podcast that makes bedtime a dream. It's called Koala Moon, and it's hosted by me, Abby. With over 300 episodes, packed with original stories and sleep meditations, Koala Moon makes bedtimes easy and enjoyable. Episodes start out engaging and really rather magical, but as they progress, they gently slow to a calm and relaxing pace to have your little ones out like a light. Since launching in 2022, Koala Moon has helped with over 20 million nights sleep and received over 6,000 five-star reviews. Win back your evenings. Listen to Koala Moon now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Man, he sounds focused and
he's having fun, mm-hmm. man.
He's focused and look, they control their own destiny. And, you know, it is true what he's saying. He really just kind of not took the pressure off of himself, but he said, listen, I'm going to stop trying to be perfect. I'm just going to go out here and play. That doesn't mean you go out there and start inventing stuff, which he was more disciplined, in my opinion, from going through his progressions and taking what was there. And, yeah. and the one interception he threw, it's 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, was really like a punt. Yeah. And you look, if you're Zevian Capers, you got to go up and at least do something.
You just can't watch
that's
it.
That's how I always looked at picks. They're like
of
punts.
Course.
Just
yeah, punt well, just, well, no, well, I'm not just, saying that. Don't. I'm not saying that you know, it's okay to throw interceptions, but if you're going to throw one, that's the one to throw.
Yeah, down
they
the field,
intercepted at the 15.
You look at that. You look at that throw, you know, look at it and say, man, that was a bad ball.
Yeah.
Right? I didn't look at that. I'd say, man, that was a bad pass. Capers, do something.
Well, to me, and again, the Auburn wide receiver room stepped up out of their minds. I mean, you did what you and listen, it wasn't like there was a ton of hard catches or super contested catches,
just
but Cedric Jackson, I've been as critical as Auburn's wide receivers and talk about them being on the back of a milk carton. They took a step off the back of the milk carton. They found them. They found them. Now they're just contacting everybody where to come get them.
They may
and
have a couple stars.
They didn't eat the popcorn before the game.
They may have a couple stars today.
Before the game. Look, they may. It's a little bit of foreshadowing there. Look at you, Cone. Look at you.
Look at us. Who would have thought?
Look at us. Who'd have thought? But anyway, speaking of us, let's get to the Booster Cup, Blaine. Apparently there's been a couple donos, which is J-Boy Show terminology for donations.
Yes, we have a $5 dono from Jordan Kilgo.
I'm going to Vegas.
Kilgo, Kilgo.
For right? sure.
Hashtag Ask J-Boy. If Auburn continues to improve and Bo Nix and the receivers play the way they did Saturday, can they win out?
Look, it's going to be a tall order. You look at Alabama there. It is at home. We know Alabama's personnel. And again, you don't have to be superstars. But if Auburn can operate, and listen, I thought there was two sneaky moves. One maybe not so sneaky. But they put Landon King, a freshman, really tight end flex Y guy, into the wide receiver room this past week.
Yep.
And that sends a message to all the older guys without coming out and saying it. Y'all aren't doing what you're supposed to do. Enough to the point where we're not only moving a freshman, we're changing a freshman's position. And he went out there and played. Now, did Landon King look fantastic? No, he was, I'm sure, a little nervous. That's how it is when you're a young guy going out there playing in a big game. Did make a big catch on third down. But that sent the message.
Yeah.
And the first guy to come out and make
to play? The veteran Javarius Johnson on a really good throw from Bo Nix when they took advantage of Catiline being out. You saw the deep cross, deep over, whatever you want to call it. Bo put it out there. They were able to hit it. Other guys stepped up. Shedrick Jackson, like I said, Arkansas jumped off sides a few times. Bo threw the back shoulder, threw the whole shot one time. He absolutely just threw a pistol in there.
It's amazing what applying pressure can do to guys.
It is amazing. Pressure, it makes diamonds. It's the truth, and especially when you're dealing with really competitive, ultra-competitive 18 to 22-year-olds, you saw guys step up. Not only that, but in the tight end game as well.
We have another $10 donor from the Convicted Arsonist.
Ooh.
What a name.
Yeah.
What a name. All right, so what is Auburn's ceiling in recruiting this year, and do you expect a big jump in the coming weeks considering Harsin's early success and his vision for the program starting to come into fruition?
Well, anytime you win and anytime a new staff comes in and they can go point to the scoreboard and say, hey, recruits, told you, we're not messing around, but guess what? We should be set. We had you, we're 7-0. We need you. See, Auburn's kind of in that place where you're at a brand name school that has had success. You're having success, but you can still offer playing time legitimately. Not where the player's like, okay, you're saying that I'm going to have a chance to play, but I'm looking at three All-Americans right here. You're kind of in that honey hole, in that perfect situation where you want to be. So I think Auburn's going to finish with at least a top 15 class, maybe a top 12. And don't be surprised if you see two big names commit to Auburn here in the next couple weeks. But if you're Auburn too, you sign two offensive linemen. I think both of them have a chance to be four stars at the end of the day. But you're signing high school offensive linemen that you can develop, that you can look back and say, all right, these guys were the cornerstones of what we're trying to build here from the inside out with Drew Bobo and Eston Harris. But there was also another move that Auburn made. Killian Zerair started at left tackle for Austin Troxell. Austin Troxell's a guy who's been through a lot of injuries, hasn't been playing great. And at least from a pass protection standpoint, I thought Zerair, who was really still kind of somewhat new to football, the JUCO transfer, I thought he came in and actually played pretty well. I thought he held up on that side. And if they give Bo Nix time and the chemistry with the receivers keep developing against these zone coverages, and then you can get him in man where you start using Bo's legs when backs are turned, when you're starting to get Tank one-on-one on swing passes with Nichols where he makes one move and it's another 20 yards, that is when you're going to see Auburn start operating at full capacity. It's one thing to take advantage of zone coverage, but what are you going to be able to do when they line up and say, all right, well, these guys are weapons against zone, so we're going to press them and play them tight. That's when we're going to know about Auburn, and they have to continue to step up to play well.
Yeah, it's amazing what Bo Nix can do with a good pocket and receivers that can catch.
It's amazing.
We have another $4.99 donation from Dakota Faulkner. What's up, Dakota? Does Bo build off his last performance and finish the season strong with potential to enter the draft this year or return to build stock?
We're going to have to see. His stock's rising as he keeps playing like this. I don't think he's going to slow down. To me, it's can the guys on the periphery keep playing well? Can Auburn start to run the ball even better? Can the wide receivers continue to make plays? That's a bigger question to me and has been the bigger question to me for Auburn than anything. And again, you'd much rather have Bo Nix win a game playing like that than have to win a game playing like he did against LSU, where you're running around and having to try and invent crazy stuff and you're not on time and the offense isn't staying in front of the chains.
Yep, we have a couple things here. All right, we got a $5 donation from the DGD podcast.
DGD Dizzle.
To quote the great Eric Russell, to hell with Florida and the mule they came in on, go Dogs.
Look, Florida's in a lot of,
hostile
1, 2, and 3.
Breaking news here, guys.
Breaking news
from the Booster Club. Barney Knight comes in and says he heard from sources that Jake Crane is taking the LSU job, guys.
Listen.
Congrats.
Listen.
Congrats.
First off, I'd like to thank my family for being there for me every step of the way. No, listen. Look, I do it for half. Being able to coach those guys at LSU, it's tough in the SEC right now. But I'll throw my name in there. You know me, Kiffin, a couple of the other guys. Just let me be the special teams coordinator. That's all I want. Just want to have a little fun out there. We'll do the rugby pun.
They're special for a reason.
They're special for a reason. You got to make special specials. What else is the Booster Club saying?
Yeah, I got a question here from Matt, Michael, hashtag AskJBoy. Do you think Cincinnati would beat a team like an Auburn or an Ole Miss right now?
It'd be a fist fight. It would be a
fist
fight.
Were we just talking about this at lunch?
We were talking about it at lunch. Shout out Hudson Grill. Look, I think Cincinnati could go toe-to-toe with them. I really do, because we have to make sure we separate – in my mind, I don't care what Mackenzie Milton tries to tell you, Cincinnati this year compared to really any other Group of Five team, and I'm including Coastal, Cincinnati is the most complete Group of Five team, soon to be Power Five team that I've seen. But it's not only that. You know, you have the older quarterback coming in. You have to have, there's a certain recipe for what Cincinnati has done. You have veteran guys, but up front, not only are they good, they have somewhat, they have depth, a lot more depth than other Group of Five teams do. They have great team speed, but they're also so well coached. Watch Cincinnati tackle in the open field. And we always say there's a bunch of guys in the Group of Five, wide receivers and tight ends and running backs, that could go to the Power Five and be very effective. So that's somewhat of a linear comparison. You're not comparing apples and oranges, like going into the depth up front of a Group of Five team as opposed to a high level Power Five team. That's where the difference is. But Cincinnati does not beat themselves. They've got guys in, whether it's Ford at running back, we know Ritter at quarterback. You kind of look at the litany of players that they have that are really solid, and the moment it's not too big for them. And Cincinnati views themselves as a Power Five team. Make no mistake. These guys don't look at themselves as underdogs. And that sometimes can be a weapon in itself. Everybody knows, you know, how, you know, underdog has the momentum, this, that, and the other. But there's something when you've been the underdog and you've played against enough big dogs to realize, hey, I'm a big dog.
Yeah.
So I start walking around like a big dog. I start eating at the lunch table like a big dog. I start going to practice like a big dog. I consider myself Power Five. It's like us here at the show. Are we as big as we're going to be? No, I hope it gets as big as possible. But we've been big long enough where I consider us on the same level as other shows. And that's just a confidence thing for me. It's just how people, some people are built. I would rather look at myself in a light as comparable to these other top guys, because you are what you eat. And Cincinnati has been eating up big-time teams and teams that are relevant. Now, is their schedule fantastic? No, but it's about as good as you're going to get. It's better than some Power 5 schedules out there.
True.
You put Cincinnati in the ACC, they're winning it. I'm telling you right now.
Agree.
You put Cincinnati in the Pac-12, they got a dadgum good chance of winning it. So when I look at Cincy, I don't think they view themselves as underdogs anymore. They just view themselves as dogs. And when you view yourself as a dog, you're going to go out there and hunt. And that's what Cincinnati does for Luke Fickell, and that's why everybody wants him. But he's not leaving.
You can tell by the way they play, man. If you never see yourself.
By the way they walk around.
If you never see yourself there, you're never going to be
there.
That's
what I'm saying. Real recognizes real.
Yeah, little dog. Little dog will walk around as a big dog.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
I've got a question here from Mark Cumbie. You're going to love this one. Hashtag AskJBoy. What do you think of Brian Kelly as a candidate for LSU? Feel like he could do better at LSU? Just an observation. Get him.
Well, here's what I'm going to say. Okay, and Brian Kelly's a good coach. And I know that him and Woodward, there's that connection. I don't think it's a good fit. I really don't. I don't think Brian Kelly in the SEC is a good fit. I don't think he can recruit with these other guys as a head coach. I just don't. And Brian Kelly's a different type of coach, and I'm not saying he's not a good guy, but I just don't. I think he's perfect where he is. I think if you start putting him up against the Nick Sabans and the Kirby Smarts, I just don't see it. He's just not that guy. I would rather go against Brian Kelly than Marcus Freeman, honestly, because Marcus Freeman will come down here and start snatching everybody up. You think Mel Tucker will come down here and start snatching everybody up? Marcus Freeman will come down here and start snatching everybody up. I just don't like – I don't think the LSU fans would like it, because you want to talk about somebody that is not super fan-friendly, that isn't somebody that the media is going to fall in love with, and somebody who says dumb things at times – that's Brian Kelly. And if it doesn't go good, especially early, he's not the type to be patient with the media and the fan base. I don't like the fit. People are going to be saying that name. I'm going to ask Mike Scarborough about that when we get him in here. And, Mark, I appreciate the question, but I think that would be a terrible hire.
Yeah, I'm not trying to beat a dead horse here, but he low-key accidentally said he's going to execute his whole team in halftime.
Yeah,
so.
That was an old coach quote. I actually thought it was hilarious. But nowadays you just – I think the fit at Notre Dame is good. He's proven himself there. The way they recruit there, I know LSU recruits itself, but when it comes down to it, LSU's got to battle those schools too. Alabama's going in Louisiana and getting players.
He's not going anywhere.
He just passed Rodney for the winningest football coach in Notre Dame history.
He's
happy where he is. They're going to be good enough to make the playoff, the 12-team playoff. They're going to get beat in the first or second round every year, and we're going to be talking about this all the time. I still think they should join a conference. I don't like the Brian Kelly fit.
I've got a question here from Landon Stone. What's up, Landon? Should Dan Mullen be fired? Or should he be forced to fire Todd Grantham and hire a big-name defensive coordinator, Will Muschamp?
Yeah, I think Dave Heron asked that question, too. It's a great question, and listen, this week, this past week, I thought the Dan Mullen should be on the hot seat rumors were a little bit too much. But if you go back and look at it, and I believe in his last 8 FBS games, they're 2-6. They're 2 wins coming against Tennessee and Vanderbilt. Not exactly the titans of the sport right now. Tennessee's a lot better than Vanderbilt is. But I'm looking at this Florida team, and it's scary, not only because the lack of adjustment that we talked about mm-hmm. defensively and just a simple adjustment, but when you really look at it, they tend, in my opinion, to be about as inconsistent as any team out there. And we hammered this home. Bama week, right? They got up for Bama. Looked a lot better against Bama than everybody thought. They walked into LSU like that game wasn't going to be close. Like they just had to show up and roll their helmet out there. And they got beat. They're lucky they scored how they did, or it would have gotten really, really ugly. I mean, Price ran for 287 yards, but it's this up and down roller coaster that Florida fans are looking around going, wait, whoa, whoa, wait, 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 wait. We won the East last year. I know we lost a lot, but we still got good players. There's no reason that Florida team should have gone down there and lost like that to LSU. No. There's no reason they should have gone down there and lost. But you look at where they're at right now, and you look at the future, and you say, okay, Emory Jones just isn't the guy. Anthony Richardson has to be the starting quarterback. You can't, I don't think you can, the locker room will look at you the same if you're like, no, we're just going to let Emory go out there and throw some more interceptions. Because I'm telling you, just like we said in the offseason, it caught hell from this from Florida fans. Emory may have waited 3 years, and everybody's like, oh, well, Mac Jones waited 3 years. Well, that isn't Bama, and that sure as hell ain't Mac Jones. The guy doesn't know what he's looking at. Coverage-wise, go back and watch the tape. There's 2 or 3 plays where he looks off the primary read that's a touchdown. One time on a stalk and go, they had it set up perfect. Dan Mullen was a perfect play call. He looked off that one, threw it across the middle, got the ball intercepted. He's not the guy. Anthony Richardson's a better runner than he is, and the more I watch Anthony Richardson throw, now he put some up in harm's way, and we understand that. Young guys tend to do that. But the throw he made to Copeland for the touchdown... I'm surprised the U.S. military didn't call him and ask him, you know, dude, what RPG is strapped to your shoulder? So at the end of the day, Florida needs to turn it around. And you look at that schedule, you're about to lose to Georgia. And if you gave up 287 rushing yards to one running back against LSU, Georgia may rewrite the record books. They got 4 of them.
Where's that game at?
It's Jacksonville. Which one?
It's Jacksonville. In Jacksonville. That's always in.
The world's largest cocktail party. And that's right. I'm going to call it that. So, I'm going to call it the Red River Shootout, and I'm going to call it the cocktail party. We need to grow up a little bit.
So it's a Florida home game. Always.
Yeah, pretty much. But Georgia's going to take it over.
It's not going to matter.
Look, they could have 200,000. They could have the whole state of Florida at that game. It's not going to save them. But at this point, you got to start asking questions. Mike Scarborough, ready to go?
Mike is ready to go. Do you want Mike in here? All right, so we'll do 5 stars afterwards. How about that?
Let's bring Mike in here.
All right, here we go.
Tiger Bait's very own Mike Scarborough joining us with the beautiful brick background hanging to the right of the screen there. Mike, what's up, brother?
Nothing, man. It's just we had a little bit of news here in the last 24 hours.
Yeah, something. You know, it's what's been going on? I missed it. No, I'm just kidding. Number one, and Mike, me and you kind of talked about this last time we had you on. It was a matter of when, not if. We'd been talking about it even after the Florida win. Just your thoughts on the news and your thoughts on Edo just kind of – hanging around.
Yeah, look, I think that mutual press conference last night was a positive for LSU. Mm-hmm. Because honestly, you know, something we've been talking about for weeks, the candidates to be an interim coach for LSU and coach this team the rest of the way were not very appealing. I think this gives Ed Orgeron an opportunity to go out in a more positive way otherwise. You know, he's going to get the entire amount of money that's owed him, which I found to be shocking when we got those PDF files from LSU last night. But look, the way they played Saturday with a roster that's absolutely depleted, I was joking earlier that someone sent me the UCLA game week depth chart with all the names marked through with a marks a lot that weren't available to play. And I'm telling you, it looked like a government, you know, CIA
document redacted
with all the redactions. I mean, it was something to see. And for them to, you know, hearing you talk about Dan Mullen, boy, I don't know what the answer is for there, because, you know, in reality, there's no excuse for them losing that game to LSU.
Yeah. No, I agree with you 100%. And I'm not a big fan of Ed Orgeron just hanging out. I mean, you might as well just let him go, man. Go to your fishing hole. Just don't throw me in it, even though I wasn't the caller. I mean, that wasn't me, obviously. But, Mike, give me some candidates. We've talked about this a ton on the show. Now that it's kind of out there and we know that they're parting ways, who are 3 to 4 guys right now in your mind that you would circle early? Having said that, it's never the first guy that gets the job, but there's always a first time for everything.
Yeah, and I think, look, obviously you've got a big Lane Kiffin group out there. Jimbo Fisher was asked about it earlier. I think, obviously, I've said that I think Mario Cristobal would be number one on my board.
I agree.
I'm starting to warm up to Lane Kiffin. Guys like you are wearing me down a little bit.
Come over, Mike. Come to the party.
Yeah. I need to start getting some of the Ruth Chris gift cards that Jimmy Sexton sent it out to everybody.
I wish there's one right across the street. He hadn't sent me a gift card yet, co-commissioner of the SEC, Jimmy Sexton. But, Mike, too, Mel Tucker's another name that's getting thrown around. I think, yeah. James Franklin, I don't see it. I don't see him leaving Penn State. I don't see them paying that buyout. But, well, Mel Tucker, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, my problem with Mel Tucker is he hasn't done it long enough. I think LSU is not a job to reach for that right now. But I certainly think he would be somebody you would talk with. So I think everybody I talked to that cover the Big 12 and the Pac-12 seem to think that Franklin's heading to USC, and he's already trying to put together a staff who's going to join in there. So wow. I think you would take him off the list. And if you're also talking about going a minority hire, Eric Bieniemy's name's out there, but that doesn't work because he's coaching the Chiefs. I think he's going to be a head coach. Mm-hmm. So in the NFL, and you wouldn't be able to get him till January anyways. You've got a class of 22 in Louisiana, this is good as any class this century as far as the caliber of players. And they lost Aaron Anderson, the 4-star wide receiver from Edna Carr this morning, who I think is incredible. If you watch LSU and you like Brian Thomas and you like Jack Besh and you like Malik Nabers, et cetera, had Aaron Anderson been in last year's class, I would have ranked him ahead of all of them. So that was a blow this morning. And Alabama might reap the rewards of this transition with him.
I'm shocked.
You know, a Tyreek Hill, Josh Reed type of receiver.
Oh, you had me at Tyreek Hill. If they get that guy out there, 100% which. And the wardrobe. But, Mike, let me ask you this, too. You bring up recruiting. LSU, we know Louisiana kids love LSU. But they recruit outside of the state of Louisiana as well. How fast do they need to hire a guy, not to salvage this class, but how fast and how much of an effect of this will it have on recruiting? Because Ed O really can't help you now. He's 88 and out the gate.
Look, the problem you've got is a good number of the class of 22 Louisiana kids are midterm grads.
Great point.
You've got several weeks there in December, and you can't dilly-dally and be – you know, naming a guy on like December 14th or something. You know, you need to have a guy there. If you could get a guy there, like whatever that Monday is. Is it November 29th after the A&M game? Yeah, I mean, if you could get a guy in on that day or as soon as possible, the better, and he can hit the ground running. You know, look, the current staff is getting paid every day. They're recruiting. And, you know, they're going to have the message, look, even though we're not going to be here, we still think LSU is the best school for you. And I think most of the commitments are going to stick. Because I just do think whoever Scott Woodward brings in the fold is going to be somebody pretty spectacular. I believe that. You know, and I keep talking to you, you know, we talk about we had a baseball coaching search to replace Paul Maneri in the spring. And while everybody was talking about Corbin and Pat Casey, would he come out of retirement, and Vitello at Tennessee, it was Jay Johnson, the guy who was, you know, done some nice things in Arizona, but wasn't flashy. And so I keep saying, who is the Jay Johnson of football? And I wonder if it's not somebody like Dave Aranda, who's now, you know, with 5-6-1.
That's another guy. But yeah, has he been doing it long enough, though, Mike? Because my question is, if you're going to make the Mel Tucker argument, he hasn't been doing it long enough. It's kind of weird to say that Dave Aranda has been doing it long enough.
I think Dave Aranda, you would take over Mel Tucker because he's familiar with Baton Rouge. There's a relationship there. I think had Scott Woodward if Aranda was going to leave just because for more money, I think Scott Woodward would have thrown the bank at him to keep him in Baton Rouge. But, you know, Ed wanted to go to a four-man front and wanted to ran out the door. So, but I know Scott Woolworth thinks very, very highly of Dave Aranda.
Yeah, well, Dave is a dadgum good coach. And, you know, I like that fit. I like that fit a lot better than Brian Kelly. That's another name that's kind of been thrown around. But, Mike, I want to get to the Booster Club. Lane, do we have any questions for Mike Scarborough from our LSU faithful in the Club of Boosters?
Yeah, we got a question here from Colin G, and he asks, who, in y'all's opinion, would be the most realistic and safest hire for LSU?
Safe, Mike. Do you play it? I'll let you answer that question, but I don't know if playing it safe is the answer for LSU.
And see, but that is kind of why I, you know, when you start talking about Lane Kiffin, I keep saying, does that match Scott Woodward? Man, look at who he's hired everywhere he's been. He goes for the established championship or high number of wins coach has done it and built a program and maintained it for years. He likes stability. He doesn't like the guy who's got off the field remarks and stuff. And I keep saying it. We've had two cartoon characters in a row at LSU. I don't know that you go to a third. And I'm not saying Lane Kiffin is a third because I think he's a whole different guy than he was 6-8 years ago. I believe that. We're going to see. I think the safe hire, and I think what's a match for LSU is Mario Cristobal. I think the issue that LSU has had, we go into so many football season saying that the weak link on the football team is the offensive line. And that is a guy that can recruit nationally. He's got a reputation for offensive linemen. So if you keep all your athletes home in Louisiana, which they grow on trees here, and then you add a guy who can recruit out of state, and all of a sudden you're producing offensive linemen that are NFL caliber, that's the difference between LSU going 9-3, 10-2, 9-3, 11-1, 9-3, would be the difference for LSU is finally having consistent offensive line play from year to year. So that's kind of why he's my number one guy. But I'm not married to him. I might be coming around on Lane Kiffin, but I think either way, and we've talked about it, the list that Scott Woodward's going to have to choose from is going to be is heads and tails much greater than what Joe Leiba was working with in 2016.
Yeah. Yeah, and LSU's a destination job. We know that. Blaine, one more question from the Booster Club, and we're going to let Mike get out of here and get back on the trail.
Absolutely. I knew this question was going to get asked.
Oh, here we go. Brace for impact.
I'm going to go and ask it just so, you know, Mike can put it down for the LSU faithful.
Oh, please say it. I know what you're going to say.
Question from Grant Brown.
Please say it.
Nick Saban said his biggest regret was leaving LSU. Could we see him go back and bring LSU and Natty and then ride his coaching career into the sunset?
Go, Mike. Answer it, Mike. You got it, bud.
I tell you what, if you thought that was a mess on the field in Knoxville Saturday night, the debris, what would that be like if LSU came back in with Saban and to Bryant Denny you'd actually have flaming dumpsters being hurled down on the field. I mean, no, I don't think that's happening. But I tell you what, Scott Woodward's the type of guy where all of a sudden he's reaching for guys that, I think he's going to inquire about some of the biggest pie-in-the-sky guys you can name.
Yeah.
But
well,
no,
you know,
I don't
and again,
think
Yeah, LSU should choose. And Grant, I'm glad you asked that question so we could get it out of the way. And you're right. If Nick Saban would ever go anywhere outside of Alabama and LSU opened up, you obviously have to address it. But the odds of it, I'm just glad Grant, I'm glad you asked that question so we were able to get it out of the way. But Mike, Ole Miss this weekend, going to be an interesting one. I know LSU is pretty beat up. Ole Miss is a little bit beat up. I think Matt Corral is going to play as well. But my friend, we're going to have you back soon. It's always great to have you on. Tell everybody where they can find your work. And you got some great deals out there, man. You're wheeling and dealing, and the sex appeal is appealing.
Yeah, man. Check us out at tigerbait.com. $1 gets you on the site to try us out for a week. Choose the annual package. You get 3 months. You're basically 3 months free when you do that. And we're going to be covering this backwards and forward on tigerbait.com. Our premium message board is growing and lots of topics there, and I'm there answering questions day and night. So if you're an LSU fan, swing by tigerbait.com. We want to have you with us.
For sure. Well, Mike, I appreciate it, buddy. Stay safe out there and hit me up.
All right, Jake. Talk soon, bud. Thanks.
All right, brother. Hey, some good questions there from the Booster Club as Mike Scarborough coming in.
Absolutely.
Bringing the heat as usual.
It's a scholar and a gentleman.
A scholar and a gentleman. Some things we can both respect. Yo, let's get to five stars of the weekend. Let's go ahead. You want to dive into that, Cone?
Let's do it.
You ready for that?
All right, let's do it.
Five stars.
Five star. Go ahead.
Purdue takes down Iowa, and this is a matter of time for Iowa. It's funny, we talk about how Ole Miss can only win one way, really, in the track meet. And Blaine, I got to give it to you. You called this one. We talked about upset alerts of the weekend. This is what you said.
I mean,
said.
We do eight picks a week, and it wasn't one of his eight. So, I mean, like, what can we just call things outside of our
pick? Yeah, why are you this guy right now?
Yeah, listen. We have eight picks. Do you have any peanut butter with that jelly?
No, listen. We have eight picks. I'm just saying, like, if you called it, call it on your picks. That's what I'm just saying.
Okay, that's fine. Look.
So far, I'm just seeing.
Wow.
I'm just seeing.
You want me to take you here? Yeah. Let me take Purdue money line.
Here we go. Triple or nothing this week on me not eating hot wings.
He tried to get triple or nothing.
Look, we're talking upsets of the week. That's what we're talking about.
And
I said, I think Purdue's going to beat Iowa.
Touché. Yeah, and you know what? Some people probably bet that after hearing him say it. I mean, it's the Dark Emperor.
You're out here helping people.
We know. He is. But, Cone, I can understand where you're coming from. But so Purdue is kind of a low-key, a little bit of a giant slayer. This is their 13th win against an AP top two-ranked team. That's like fifth in the country, and there's names like Oklahoma, Notre Dame, USC right there. So Purdue is just, they're loving the David versus Goliath role. And now look, is Iowa truly a Goliath? No, not really. Petras is all right. That offense is okay. It was going to be against somebody. I just didn't think it would be against Purdue, but you got to take your hats off to them. And, you know, if you're Iowa, you got to be able to regroup. But Iowa's chances of making the playoff now, I don't think they were going to do anything if they got in there anyway. But you see how far they drop, and they should. And let me add this. San Diego State should not be ranked.
No.
I know that's random. San Diego State should not be ranked. I've watched them play multiple times. We keep ranking these teams that shouldn't be ranked. Because it's like, all right, well, we got to put some West Coast teams in there. How about San Diego State? They're 6-0, 5-1, whatever. They're not a top 25 team in the country. I wish we would just put the top 25 teams in the country. But shout out Purdue. Shout out Coach Brohm, the Boilermakers. And by the way, speaking of Purdue, Rondale Moore is an absolute dog in the NFL. Oh, my gosh.
The things that he were doing at Purdue were basically illegal.
Yeah, he was Purdue. It wasn't like, they're like, this week Purdue's playing Indiana. Well, no, really, Rondale Moore is going to play Indiana. The rest of the guys on Purdue are just going to try and get out of the way. So that's our five-star shout out to Purdue. Auburn steps up against Arkansas. I'm looking at the West right now, guys. It smells funny. Mm-hmm. And you look at the rest of that schedule, if the wide receivers can just continue to catch the ball, I know that's asking a lot, but if the wide receivers can continue to catch the ball at the rate they are, if the run game is still just good, it needs to step up a little bit, and they've got to be able to run it against elite teams. But if you're looking at the West right now and you're looking at Auburn, if they're able to play like that, and one thing they've avoided, and you knock on wood for everybody, is the injury bug. There's a lot of teams that are really beat up right now. Auburn is not one of them. And then you're going into a bye week to get healthy. And remember, Owen Papo has not played. He comes back, and it's Papo and Zakobi McClain in the middle. You just got a lot better on defense. Owen Papo is one of the top linebackers now in the SEC, but in the country. Auburn putting it together, and Brian Harsin showing improvement every week. And I tell you what, that hire's looking smarter and smarter by the day. And if they're able to win this game at home against Ole Miss, they go play an A&M team on the road, and they're playing that Ole Miss game at 7 at night in Jordan-Hare on ESPN. That place is going to be rocking.
I believe Auburn hasn't lost at Kyle Field.
No, they haven't. I don't believe Auburn has lost at Kyle Field. That's true. All right, let's get to number three. LSU runs over Florida. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I had to give a shout-out to LSU.
For sure.
And I've been as hard on Edo as anybody and as hard on those players as anybody, but they really stepped up. And they beat Florida. Like, Florida didn't really lose the game. LSU won that game. Mm-hmm. You get a pick six on defense. You're able to recreate the same explosive plays on the ground, which opened up the pass game for Max Johnson without Boutte, without Ali Gay rushing the passer, without Ricks, without Stingley, without Burns, now without Ed O. I mean, those guys really rallied to win that game against a Florida team that we know has talented players, that has played really decent against Alabama, mm-hmm. almost won the game at the end there. So you got to take your hats off to LSU and giving that fan base that has gotten all this negative energy. And now if you're an LSU fan, you won that game, you're happy about winning, but it's like a weight's been lifted off you a little bit. Now you know that you're moving on from Ed Orgeron, which gives you a chance to move on as a fan. And I think that's something that's important when you look at the whole thing. Now to the bad. Arizona. Not good. It's not a good time, Bob. Arizona's bad. They're bad. What are they, 0-17 now in their last 17 games?
Yeah.
I mean, that's Arizona. You're a state school. You can't squeak out one. But, I mean, you look at them.
It's bad.
It's bad. It's going to be bad again this week. I mean, I'm sitting here looking at it, And if you're Arizona, you talk about a program that has potential, that has fallen flat on their face.
18-game losing streak.
18 games. Y'all couldn't even look around and win one. And it's not like you're out there playing, you know, the best teams in the world.
Nah, 34-0 loss to a 2-4 Colorado team.
Yeah, you know? Colorado's not exactly the globetrotters on offense either. Mm. It's just bad. And if you're – look, somebody will go in there and turn that program around, even though it's not going to be hard to turn around an 0-18 program. You just got to win one. But they're looking like how Arkansas used to look. And at least Arkansas was in the SEC.
Yeah.
I mean, it's bad, and it's only going to get worse, I think, for Arizona. And – man, if you're an Arizona fan, you're just hoping basketball gets here. But it's not like y'all been really good in basketball lately either.
Dark times right
dark,
now.
It's dark times. It is the dark age for Arizona athletics right now, especially in football. Okay. I want to talk about this Tennessee thing at the end, and I teased this earlier in the show. There's one part of this equation that nobody's talking about. What happened, I've never really seen it happen like that. No. You've had people throw stuff at multiple sporting events. But the way that some of the Tennessee fans acted at the end of the game, you need to reevaluate your priorities. You do. And I wonder how many people were super drunk and woke up the next morning and were like, dude, did I throw something? And their boy's like, dog, you threw a mustard bottle. Like a whole, we don't even know where you got it from. But in all seriousness, and I know that that's not a good example of the whole Tennessee fan base. And the people that should be the most upset are the Tennessee fans that didn't partake.
Yeah.
And we can talk about putting people in danger, and that's been that horse has been beaten to death. But here's where it hurts you. This night was supposed to be Tennessee's night. Really win, lose, or draw. And you lost a close game. And Joe Milton's got to throw the ball at the end. I mean, yeah. That just shows negative two stars, Joe Milton. Mm. I mean, goodness gracious. But when you look at what happened, that night was Tennessee's night. Hey, we're kind of back in the national landscape a little bit. All these recruits are coming here to watch the game. And you have to be able to recruit better players to win. You want to compete against Georgia? You got to have the dudes. You want to compete against Alabama? You got to have the guys. You want to compete to win a national championship? You got to have the fellas. And if I'm a mom or a dad or a grandmother or an aunt or an uncle, and I'm at that game, and they're asking my son to go there, and I'm watching that, I'm not sending my kid there.
Yep.
That was the biggest lost opportunity. Losing the game is one thing. You can go and say, hey, guys, look how close we are. Walter Nolan, look how close we are. Five-star wide receiver. Look at this atmosphere. Look what you can play in the best conference. But you know what all those parents and those players left with that game? That image of you having to stop the game because people are throwing golf balls and full water bottles at the players, at the coaches. That's the worst thing, in my opinion, outside of just putting people in danger. Y'all hurt yourselves way worse. Because if I'm Josh Heupel, how do I answer that? What happens when I go into a recruit's home 2 days before the signing period, and it's down to them, two other big-time schools. And the mom looks at me and goes, well, coach, your fans were throwing things that could hurt the players. How do you answer that? There's not a good answer. So you just put the coaching staff, the one that you're relying on to bring you back to national prominence, you just put them on Front Street. And that's the part that people aren't talking about enough. And if I could give you 5 negative stars, I would. And I know that's not, like I said, a great example of everybody in the Tennessee fan base. But it only takes one. And it wasn't like 3 people were throwing things. It looked like a landfill by the time that game was done. There was at least 500 people throwing things. It's unacceptable. And there should be repercussions. What are those repercussions? If this was the European Soccer League, which I'm glad it isn't, I love European soccer, you'd be playing in an empty stadium the next game. They're going to get fined, and it's probably going to be a lot. But you just hurt yourself in recruiting way worse than you think.
And that behavior was unacceptable no matter what time, even if you've already lost the game. But at that point in the game, they still had a legitimate chance to come back and win.
You had a minute and
three timeouts.
You were 20 yards away. You were really...
And even with that nonsense, they still were down there with an opportunity to win the football game.
But you know what? You thought you were going to get Lane Kiffin, and Lane Kiffin got the last laugh with the golf ball and catching the water ball you threw at it. Do you know how many coaches are about the negative recruiting against Tennessee on that? It's free. Yeah, it's free propaganda. Yep. It's free propaganda. You don't believe me? Here, we got a clip of it from ESPN. If I'm Lane Kiffin and I'm recruiting against Tennessee, I walk in there and go, hey, not only did I beat him, they were throwing stuff at me, and I was catching it like Spider-Man. I'm surprised he didn't catch it, look at the camera, and drop it with a savage moment. Mm-hmm. But you just helped Lane Kiffin even more than beating him. But I don't want to dive too far on that. It's not a great representation of what the Tennessee fan base is. And if I was a Tennessee fan that didn't do it, I'd be more pissed off than anybody.
And, I'm
and
sure
you
they
should
are.
Be. And
I'm
I know
sure
they are. All right, we're going to hit our power rankings, throw our sharp bets out there, and then we're going to ride. All right, let's go east first.
All right.
Here we go. Georgia, number one, shocker. Kentucky thought physically they answered the bell. They weren't able to put it together fully, but physically they answered the bell.
Absolutely.
And I have just as much, if not more, respect for Kentucky. And I'm telling you right now, they're going to go 11-1.
Look at the rest of the
schedule.
They're
going to go. You want a playoff sleeper? You want a sneaky one? If Georgia beats Bama, let's just say, just for hypotheticals, and it's wide open in the West, Bama makes the SEC championship game with one loss, and Georgia beats them, Kentucky wins out. And your one loss
against Georgia?
At Georgia? And it wasn't like you lost by 40. And they scored that touchdown late. I know Mark Stoops doesn't gamble, but if he did, he definitely had Kentucky plus 21.5 for sure. He called timeout with 3 seconds. I'm so glad I didn't make that a show bet. But all right, so we got Georgia number one, Kentucky number two. I got to put Florida in front of Tennessee still. Number one, they drug them in the head-to-head. But I think if they played again and looking at how beat up Tennessee is now, Hendon Hooker had to leave the game. They have other guys across the board that are beat up. I'm putting Florida in front of Tennessee. Blaine, I know you disagree with me. Please tell everybody why you're wrong.
Well, okay, let's look at these teams right now.
Let's look at them.
All right. You're telling me right now, Florida.
I'm telling you that.
You think Florida's trending up?
I think Florida's better than Tennessee.
I just don't think so.
So you think Tennessee's trending up?
From what they were, absolutely. From when they played Florida.
Yeah, from when Florida destroyed them?
From when they played Florida at Florida.
Okay.
Right? I think right now, they lost to LSU. They just gave up 320 yards to an LSU team that doesn't know how to run the ball the entire year.
Well, we've said
the entire year. And what is Tennessee on? Tennessee just lost, I think, a 6-point loss to the number two team in the West. Right, Ole Miss, who's extremely good, who played with them for 4 quarters and could have won the game. Plenty of opportunities to win the game. Right now, you look at this Tennessee team, the offense is better, the defense is better, and they're trending up.
The offense is better. Tennessee's offense is better than Florida's offense.
A new quarterback came in.
How is Tennessee's offense better than Florida's offense?
Hey, here's Tennessee's next three games, all right? Alabama, Kentucky, and Georgia. So
That's fine. I'm not saying about the future. I'm talking right now.
Oh, you're not saying about the future.
I'm saying Tennessee, you look at Tennessee right now, they look a hell of a lot better than what Florida looks like. You want to talk about injuries. AR-15's hurt. Emory Jones can barely throw the ball. And when he runs, he just tiptoes through. Let me get three and get down. Hooker, getting relevant. He's hurt. I know. What's his full injury? Do we know?
It's a hamstring, I think. Maybe a knee. He couldn't walk off the field. I'm going to wait.
A lot
that.
Of plays in that game.
I agree with you on the trending, but the head-to-head loss, blowout loss, has to count for something.
They
even if it
asleep.
Was at Florida.
Tennessee didn't score a point in the second half.
And
you're
well,
telling
that's
me,
fine. Okay.
You're
you,
telling
you,
me
you,
the Tennessee
okay, so we're doing
offense.
The transitive property thing. I mean,
that's a head-to-head loss.
To quote Dikembe, no. We're not doing the transitive property.
So
we're talking about head-to-head, because if we were doing the transitive property, that would be off the way they played
okay,
last
we're
week,
going head
and
head.
They scored 42
we're
points.
We're going head-to-head. Is A&M better than Bama?
No, that's not the question. I'm not ranking A&M in front of Bama. I'm talking about Tennessee and Florida. You can't triple stamp a double stamp.
Yeah,
don't
well,
try and bring something
I look
over
at these
here
two,
and compare
these
to something
two teams
else.
And Florida, you just lost to a bad LSU team.
Mm-hmm.
A bad LSU
mm-hmm.
team.
Tennessee lost to Pitt.
Okay, that's early. Joe Milton was starting.
I don't care.
Okay, it's a new quarterback.
Not anymore.
Well, yeah, he's going to be. I don't think he's out. And once we get up to the injury, that's fine. As you look at Tennessee right now, they're trending up. They're looking bad. And Florida is trending down.
Okay. Well, look, you can have your argument. I can have the right side of the argument.
Yeah,
we'll just do that.
We'll
All
see.
Right. Let's go to the rest of the East. You're definitely my brother. USC number 5, Missouri 6. Missouri is just. Oh, not a very good football team. Texas A&M ran through them like well water. Vandy at number 7, who almost beat South Carolina. You know Shane Beamer after that game was like, thank you. Thank you. Like, I can listen. I can sell it. So that's a hard one to sell on the recruiting trail.
And do you remember when we did a punter go early in the season? We said over, under, or maybe, I think it was over, under South Carolina will win one. Zeb Nolan and South Carolina will win one SEC game. And you said, do they play Vandy?
That's exactly right.
Almost lost it.
That last second drive. But all right, let's get to the West as we wrap up here. All right, Bama, look, this is wide open. All right, and you can argue, Blaine, we can have 4 to 5 different logical arguments, and your argument is not that irrational. It's not right, but it's not that irrational.
Yeah.
So you got Alabama number one. We're going to put Ole Miss at 2. That's going to be a great matchup in 2 weeks. Ole Miss got to get by LSU, guys. This, I'm telling you, we talk about games that smell funny. LSU's playing with house money. They may come out and run 6 reverses. Who cares? What are they going to do, fire Ed O? You know, what are they going to do? I got Auburn number 3 and trending up, and you get Ole Miss at home. I tell you what, if Auburn finishes second or higher in the SEC West, Brian Harsin's got to legitimately, you know, they're going to give it to Kirby, and they should, because they're going to go undefeated, and they're the best team in the country. But you can make a case for Brian Harsin for SEC coach of the
year. Oh, yeah.
If Auburn finishes second. So we got A&M number 4. Auburn has to go to A&M, and I can just feel the A&M fans right now just are disagreeing with me at an unbelievably high level, and that's okay. I love dissent on this show. I'm going to put A&M number 4 right now, Arkansas number 5, okay, and they've got to get it together. Like, yeah, they've been playing with house money, not anymore. There's expectations now. They've seen how good they can play. They've got to be able to put it together and continue to do that. So we've got Arkansas 5, LSU 6, and Mississippi State 7. And to me, as wild as the West is, I think that's how you have to rank them right now. I really do. Yep. Let's get to anything real quick from the Booster Club before we get to Sharps.
Yes. Yes. Where is it?
Yes.
All right. We have a $10 donation from DJ Barber.
DJ?
With Corral's leg injury lingering going into Saturday, how does that impact the LSU game? And if it continues to bother him, how does that impact a huge SEC West matchup next week at Auburn?
Well, listen, nobody's 100%, but if Matt Corral's not able to run well and you're able to, for lack of a better term, corral him in the pocket, that spells trouble for Ole Miss, because Braylon Sanders is hurt. You're running out of weapons. Not only outside, you had a guard that was out. And if you're Ole Miss right now and you're laying, and I think Matt's going to play, but if he's not able to run effectively, you take a huge chunk away from him. And now defenses don't have to worry about as much. And we always talk about defensively, addition by subtraction. The less ways you can hurt me, the more ways I can hurt you. And if Ole Miss does not have the ability at the quarterback position to run, and it's not like they're going to bring anybody out of this world. Luke Altmyer's just not ready as a young guy, and that's not his fault. John Rhys Plumlee is not a guy that you're going to line up at quarterback and be able to have nearly the same output that you've gotten. And I wonder if they're going to spell him a little bit, maybe in some wildcat or half wildcat, or you just call it cat, half cat. I don't know, because he can throw it a little bit. I would not be shocked to see him get some run at quarterback. But if Matt Corral's not able to run this week, you're worried. But if he's still beat up heading to Auburn in what is a huge game at 7 o'clock Eastern on ESPN, it's a problem for Ole Miss. All right, let's get to the sharp bets, guys. Shout out to the Booster Club. Great stuff today. Thank you guys for the donations. All right, we're going to start with me. Give me the Bama-Tennessee under 67.5, because I don't think Bama's scoring 68. That's why I'm taking it. I think this game, look, Alabama's going to beat them up. We know that. I don't think this game's going to be close. If Joe Milton's the quarterback in there, they may not get past midfield. And again, it's not like Tennessee can line up and do to Alabama on the ground. You got to see how Cade Mays' health is, a guy that went out. It's not like they're going to line up and just beat you up with power counter, heavy run game, jumbo packages. They're going to go fast. They're going to hit you with inside zone. They're going to hit you with split zone. They're going to RPO and spit it outside. But Alabama's got cats. Alabama's problem is not how good they are athletically in the back end and at linebacker. It's how good the linebackers and front seven have been able to defend, and really the linebackers when you look at it against the run. Our guy Jordan Battle got a pick 6 too. I know he was smiling the whole way.
Yeah.
Jordan, I've never seen Jordan without a smile. He's only got to go hit a 300-pounder with a smile on his face. That's why he's good at football. But I don't think they're going to score. Then ULL and Butch Jones' Arkansas State team, and I know he took James Blackman out and they looked a little bit better. That team on defense is not very good at tackle football. They're just not. If it was, you know, 7-on-7, maybe flag football, possibly, but this is tackle football. Levi Lewis and ULL covered for me last week, covered for Blaine early last week. I'm riding with a minus 17, and I think that number's going to go up like I'm in an elevator in Wonka's factory.
Blaine?
Yeah. Hey, another week in the green, boys.
Surprise, surprise.
All right, this is what I'm taking. I'm taking Texas A&M minus 20.5 versus South Carolina at home. And if you want to double that up for a halftime bet, I would. You're probably looking somewhere 12.5, 13 in there. I would double up on that. South Carolina coming off a big win versus Vanderbilt. Yeah, this is going to be an easy game for Texas A&M. I feel like this is going to be a halftime cover. And I'm taking the boys I've been riding with all year.
You've been riding with Coastal. There's a new
Coastal
Marshall.
All day. I watched App State versus Lafayette. And it was bad. I think Coastal's a better team versus Lafayette. It's a 3.5-point spread. And if that's a halftime, too, it is on the road, but I take that to great quarterback play travel, so I'm taking the Coastal boys.
Yes. I like it.
I love that A&M bet, too.
All right, boys, 5-1 in my last 3 weeks of sharps. I'm going to go 7-1 after this week. You know why? Because I'm going to take Oklahoma State plus 6.5 at Iowa State. Oklahoma State 6-0, and you want to give me 6.5 points, I will take it. Second one, Ole Miss LSU under 77.5. Matt Corral playing or no Matt Corral playing, 77.5. I like it.
Another big one to watch is Chance Campbell, the middle linebacker's healthy there for Ole Miss. Wrist. But all right, guys, thank you guys so much. Make sure you hit that subscribe button. Check out everything on The Volume. Go to thejboyshow.com. Grab you some merch. There's some really cool stuff in there. Some of it's got my face on it. If you don't want that, I understand. But there's a lot of great stuff, men and women, in there. It's good price. It's great quality. Check that out. Also, we drop the audio, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and iHeartRadio after the show. So if you listen to us on the commute to work, if you're listening morning, afternoon, evening, nightcap, we appreciate it. We're going to keep bringing the juice, on pace for another record-setting month because of you guys. Shout out to the Booster Club. Tell everybody about us. We're trying to take this whole thing over in like Kentucky's undefeated season, but not their playoff hopes. We're going, gone.
The J-Boy Show is produced by David Cohn, associate producer Blaine Crane, audio engineer Faison Sharif, executive producers Jake Crane, Vince Thompson, Steve Chamberlain, and David Cohn. Voiceover announcer, Mark Aston. Please subscribe to The Volume on YouTube, where you can catch us live weekdays at 3 p.m. Win the water cooler with The J-Boy Show.
The Volume.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on Season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.